thought worthy of attention, shining a torch on the everyday lives of the faceless masses. She looked at the top sheet of paper in the pile. Beverly Shields died peacefully in a hospice yesterday at a ripe old age. She had spent 40 years as a nursery teacher in Duddingston, just along the road from Martha's house. She thought of her house, a charcoaled shell. This woman had done nothing amazing. She hadn't travelled around the world or been part of the fucking Bloomsbury set or flown across the Atlantic single-handed in a balloon or spent weeks behind enemy lines gathering intelligence. She had just gone into work every single day with a smile on her face, teaching 3- and 4-year-olds how to count, how to behave, how to go to the toilet themselves and remember to wash their little hands. She had done this for 4 decades. However many generations that was, and in the same place, so she must have seen kids that she'd taught in the 70s coming back years later as worried parents with their kids, or even grandparents with grandkids, all the while taking a simple pleasure in doing something good for society. That was a life worth documenting. Martha couldn't see the piece of paper in her hand, her eyes bloody with tears. "Why don't you let me do that?" V said. Martha sniffed and swiped at her eyes with her sleeve. "It's okay, I've got it." V pointed at the screen. "The transcript's in the usual folder." V had already interviewed the woman's daughter, more than enough to fill the 300-word slot they had left. 300 words was an insult. Beverly Shields deserved a whole book to herself, a whole fucking library. "We all deserve our own book, an account of how we live our lives, but we never get it. The only people who get written about are either famous bastards or selfish show-offs." Martha wanted to make Beverly front-page news. "Look at this woman. Look at what she did for everyone, how she lived, how her family and friends all miss her like crazy, how she left a tiny but indelible mark on the universe." Martha sighed. She began sifting through the transcript, cutting and pasting, shaping it into a narrative, stripping the extraneous language, the repetitive stuff, the incidental meanderings. 300 words. Done. She opened up the page, ready to run the copy in. Stopped. The obit above was for Gordon Harris. Another 300-worder. Byline was Virginia Tyler. Martha looked across. "I thought I'd better handle that one," V said. Martha read it. It put a nice gloss on his life. No mention of the manner of death, of course, not the done thing. Made him out to be a quiet and reserved character, but a good guy, just getting on with things. And, of course, his job as obit writer. V had played up the empathy for the grieving and bereaved angle. Didn't go over the top, make him out to be a saint or anything. Just a stand-up guy, living his life. Until he died. "Good job," Martha said.
"Thanks."
"You have a caring, considerate side after all," he smiled.
"Don't go spreading that about, Fluke, or I'll crush you."
Martha wondered again what her own obit would be like. "Well, you write my obit when I die," she said to V.
"Honey, I'll be long gone by the time you die."
"I'm not so sure," Martha said. The phone rang. Martha remembered the first time that had happened with her sitting here at the desk. The start of all this. She breathed in and out heavily, then closed her eyes. Picked up the phone.
"The standard obituary desk?"
"Sis."
"Cal."
She unclenched her teeth. "How's it going?"
"Shit."
"How shit?" Of course, he didn't know about Rose yet.
"You wouldn't believe me if I told you."
"Well, I have some news that might cheer you up a bit."
"It better be good."
"I've just been speaking to Mum."
"I'm not cheered yet."
"She wants to talk."
"Still not happy?"
"About Uncle Johnny."
"Okay.
You got me." Chapter 46. A man and a woman wearing those white plastic onesies were on their hands and knees in the living room when Martha and Cal turned up. Elaine was standing in the front garden, watching through the open window frame as they worked. They had a toolbox open on the floor between them, and they were putting samples into clear plastic bags, writing on the labels of the bags. Systematic, methodical. They weren't going to miss anything, Martha thought. Cal went and put an arm around Elaine. She gave a sad smile and touched his hand with hers. Martha stood beside them. "You wanted to talk?" she said to Elaine. Cal gave her a look. "Just go easy." The forensics were heading from the door towards the fireplace. There was no colour in the room, everything now just black and white and grey, their whole lives laid out in monochrome.
"Maybe we should go somewhere else," Cal said softly.
Elaine shook her head.
"Where else can we go? This is our home. I want to stay here."
"There isn't even anywhere to sit down, Mum."
Martha looked around. The sun had disappeared behind Arthur's seat, but the sky was still bright. One of those occasional Scottish spring evenings, bursting with possibilities for the summer, promises that were never fulfilled. The light was making the leaves on the trees across in Figgett Park shimmer. Martha looked at her feet. Their little square of front lawn needed cutting. Stupid to think of that, when your whole house had gone up in flames. But that's what came to her. She could still smell the house, the destruction of it. The forensics were at the fireplace now, poking amongst the ash and dust. She turned to Elaine.
"So, tell us about Johnny Lamb."
She got another look from Cal, ignored it. Elaine nodded.
"You deserve to know the truth."
Martha had her hands on her hips.
"Wow, after 20 years, thanks for that."
Cal shook his head.
"That's not helping."
Martha twitched her nose in disapproval. Elaine didn't turn to look at Cal or Martha, just kept staring at the forensics pair shuffling along on their knees through the ashes.
"The truth is, I never told you about Johnny because I tried to put all that stuff out of my mind. It was a difficult time. You have to understand, we were all very young. You do all sorts of stupid stuff when you're
our age," Martha said. Elaine nodded.
"Exactly."
Cal rubbed Elaine's shoulder.
"Why not start at the beginning, Mum?"
Elaine raised a hand to her forehead, like a cheap psychic pretending to get a message from beyond the grave.
"I met Ian in the Southern Bar on Clark Street. Did you know that?"
She was talking as much to herself as to them.
"The night Nirvana played there. He was cute and funny and interesting. We hit it off straight away. He was already working at the Standard, doing work experience as a student."
She glanced at Martha.
"He would have been very proud of you, you know."
She turned away.
"I thought we were in love. I suppose everyone does at that age. But there was always something at the back of my mind, something nagging away at me, that he wasn't as into the whole thing as I was. I tried not to think about it. I didn't want to be one of those paranoid girlfriends. We were smoking a lot of weed at the time, that didn't help."
Martha and Cal exchanged a look. Elaine smiled.
"You didn't know that about your ancient mother, did you? I used to smoke skunk and weed and take speed too, and drink like a fish."
"What happened to you?" Martha said. She couldn't help a note of sarcasm coming into her voice. Elaine looked at her.
"I got old, Martha. And you will one day too."
"Doesn't mean you have to become completely numb. You totally shut yourself down." Elaine looked away again.
"I had good reason for that."
"Look, I thought you were going to tell us about Johnny." Elaine sighed. "Ian was sleeping with a woman from the office. I knew it, but I never said anything. That's why I slept with Johnny. To get back at Ian."
"You slept with your boyfriend's brother?" Martha said.
"Don't you judge me," Elaine said. Why didn't you just leave Ian? Cal said.
Good question, Elaine said. I ask myself that a lot. But things were confused, complicated. After the incident with Johnny that night, it didn't really matter.
Wait, what fucking incident? Martha said. Is this to do with what happened in Northbridge in 92?
Elaine's head snapped round. How do you know about that? Martha just stared at her. What do you know? Elaine said.
What should I know? Were you there?
Elaine nodded. We were all there.
Who's we?
Me, Johnny, Ian, Gordon too.
You mean Gordon Harris?
Yes. And the woman Ian was sleeping with, Rose. Martha's eyes widened.
Wait, Rose Brown?
Elaine frowned and nodded.
Jesus Christ, Martha said. Ian was fucking Rose. She was the other woman.
Yes.
Elaine, Rose is in a coma. She apparently tried to kill herself this morning, only a few days after Gordon did the same thing, and Johnny is on the loose. What the fuck happened that night?
Elaine looked confused.
What do you mean, Johnny is on the loose? You said before that he was in the Royal Edinburgh. Ian signed him out 3 days before he went off Northbridge. Elaine, this stinks. What the hell is going on?
Elaine brought her hands up to her face.
Oh my God, I can't.
Martha grabbed her arms, shook her.
Yes, you can. Tell us. Cal tried to prise Martha's hands away. Hey, that isn't helping. Fuck you.
Cal separated them and pushed Martha away. Elaine was crying into her hands. Martha pointed at her.
I swear to God, Elaine, you better tell me what the fuck is going on here.
Martha's phone rang in her pocket. She glared at Elaine for a few seconds, Cal shaking his head in between them. Then she pulled out her phone. Billy. She pressed answer.
Not a good time, Billy.
He was on the move, out of breath.
Rose is awake, he said.
Chapter 47. She felt like she was living in hospitals these days. Might as well move in. She didn't have a home to go to anymore.
Billy was waiting outside the main entrance, holding a bunch of flowers.
You shouldn't have,
Martha said. Very funny, Billy said.
No, I mean you shouldn't have bought lilies. They're for dead people.
There are rules about flowers. He was already walking and pointing. She's in Ward 19, apparently. This way. Took them 10 minutes to find her through the corridors and double doors. They pitched up in a sunny ward mostly full of old people, six to a room. She was in the bed closest to the window. Her skin was waxy, the pills still oozing out her system.
Rose, Billy said. She turned and managed a thin smile.
Billy.
He leaned in and kissed her, put the flowers on the table next to the bed.
Rose chuckled.
Lilies are for dead people, she said.
So Martha tells me. Sorry.
Rose turned to Martha and raised her eyebrows.
Hey,
Martha said, shuffling her weight.
You okay?
Rose nodded, then looked out the window. Getting dark now, but still a trace of blue at the edge of the world.
I thought they always gave the bed nearest the window to the one who was going to die next.
Not a good sign.
She laughed, more of a cough than anything, then turned back to Billy.
You two are quite the little double act. You make a cute couple.
Never mind that, Billy said. Just relax.
Rose's movements were tentative. She was clearly in a lot of pain. She looked at a glass tumbler next to the flowers.
Can you pass me that water? She said.
Billy obliged. Martha watched. Rose had had the stuffing knocked out of her, that was for sure. Martha wondered if she'd had one of those life-affirming epiphanies you're always hearing about. A brush with death making you treasure every moment of life. Blah-de-blah.
Thanks, Rose said after a nervous sip. I believe I have you two to thank for saving my life.
It was Billy, really, Martha said. He was amazing.
The words surprised her as they left her mouth.
He got your stomach empty and kept you going until the ambulance arrived.
Billy looked at her. Well, we wouldn't have been there at all if Martha hadn't seen your name on Johnny Lamb's file at the Royal.
Rose looked at Martha. Johnny Lamb, the elephant in the room, Martha thought. The big, lumbering elephant in every fucking room she's walked into in the last week, it felt like.
Martha pointed at Rose laid out in the hospital bed. Johnny did this, right?
Rose nodded.
Billy put a hand on top of Rose's. You don't have to tell us just now.
Yes, she does, Martha said.
Rose smiled.
You're right. Of course I do.
She pushed herself up in bed with careful, difficult movements.
You okay? Billy said.
She brushed away his concern with a tiny flick of a wrist, taking her hand away from his.
He turned up at my front door just like that, she said. This morning. If this is the same day, is it?
Billy nodded.
I wasn't even dressed. I was drinking tea and looking out the window. Beautiful skies this morning. Then the buzzer went.
Johnny. After 20 years.
He had a gun.
She stopped for a moment.
I've never had a gun pointed at me.
It doesn't look too bad on television and in films, but something strange comes over you when it really happens.
I was paralysed to begin with.
He pushed in and took over.
Began ordering me about.
He seemed calm, though, like it was just a bit of business.
We went to the bedroom and he tried to get me to take the whole bottle of my Xanax. I snapped out of it and refused.
He hit me, but he was careful. Punches to the body, nothing that would show straight away.
Her voice was wavering.
It's okay, Billy said. Eventually, he pinned me down and put the gun up me.
She turned away.
Said he was going to blow my insides to pieces if I didn't take the pills.
Martha looked down at her feet, heard Rose crying.
So I took them. He had gin to wash it down. I drank it.
Rose wiped at her face.
And then he relaxed. Just waited. Obviously, he wanted it to look like suicide.
I felt groggy.
He was standing over me. That's the last I remember until an hour ago.
Martha swallowed.
Why is he doing this, Rose?
What's the oldest motive in the world?
Martha looked her in the eye.
Revenge? For all those years locked up?
Bingo.
Did he kill Ian and Gordon for the same reason?
I don't know for sure, but I think so.
Martha came over and touched the bed next to Rose's hand.
Jesus! What happened that night?
Rose sighed.
I hadn't thought about Johnny Lamb in years until a couple of weeks ago. When Ian was found dead under Northbridge, it brought everything back.
You know Ian was my dad, Martha said.
Rose frowned.
Billy told me.
So, Martha said, that night.
It was Teenage Fan Club, Rose said.
The band?
Martha thought of Ian's cassettes.
What do they have to do with it?
That was the gig we were all at, she said. It was a disaster. Not the band, they were great. But the atmosphere was poisonous because of what had been going on for months beforehand.
You mean you sleeping with Ian and Elaine sleeping with Johnny?
Martha's phone rang, breaking the spell.
Fuck,
she said. She took it out her pocket. Elaine. She stared at it for a moment, a long moment, then finally pressed answer.
Martha.
It was a man's voice, a familiar voice, the guy who had phoned her at the office and hung up.
Yes? If you want to see your mum alive one last time, come to Northbridge right now.
Chapter 48. The taxi turned onto Northbridge and Martha saw the flashing lights.
Stop at the cop car, Billy said, digging money out. The taxi driver spoke over his shoulder.
Looks like another jumper, eh?
Jesus, Martha said. They hadn't even closed the road, that's what struck her. Life or death stuff going on here, and people were still getting on and off buses, heading to the pub or home from work. A police car and an ambulance were parked in the bus lane halfway up the road. Martha knew exactly what was below that part of the bridge. Platform 8. The best place to die. A female cop ushered pedestrians off the pavement, round the bus lane, then on their way. A few people had stopped to watch, which was clearly annoying the cop. A male cop was standing talking to two people sitting on the wide spread of wall on the edge of the bridge. Two other cops were standing at the police car, one on the radio. A couple of paramedics hovered at the back of the ambulance, waiting. Wouldn't be much use up here if the jumpers went over. Should be down below, surely. Billy threw a tenner at the driver as Martha jumped out, the taxi still moving. She stumbled as she hit the ground, then found her feet again.
Just go around, the cop said, waving her arms.
Martha shook her head.
I think that's my mum.
She couldn't see clearly. It was dark now, just the fizz of streetlights. The small pools of light didn't extend to the wall of the bridge. The cop looked at Martha and Billy, then turned.
Jim?
The cop standing next to the couple on the wall came over.
Say she's the woman's daughter.
The cop took her elbow.
Come on.
Billy followed.
I'm with her.
The woman shrugged and went back to waving her arms at passers-by. Martha ran over to the wall. Elaine was crying. She was sitting on the wall, facing out over the ledge, held in a tight grip around the neck by a tall, gaunt man who had a gun pointing into her side. He looked like Ian, but taller, broader, more handsome, but a wild look on his face.
You made it, he said.
Johnny, Martha said.
Correct. Johnny looked behind Martha. And this must be Calvin.
No, I'm Billy.
Johnny looked at Martha.
Who the fuck is Billy?
A friend.
A voice from behind them.
What the hell?
Martha turned.
This is Cal, she said, as Cal ran past the cop to join them.
Good, good, Johnny said. All the family together at last, eh?
He laughed. It was about as far from a happy sound as Martha had ever heard. Cal edged towards the two of them.
Just let her go, you fuck.
Take it easy, big guy.
Johnny pushed the gun into Elaine's back and she let out a cry, then a whimper that made Cal stop. Johnny turned to the cop.
You, get over to the car.
I can't do that, sir.
Johnny pointed the gun in his face.
You can, if you don't want me to begin shooting everyone on this bridge, starting with you.
The cop put his hand out.
Just stay calm, sir.
I bet it's killing you, calling me sir. Am I right?
There was something manic about Johnny, something loose. Martha wondered how the hell he was ever released. Had he been like this for 20 years? She turned to the cop.
Shouldn't you be doing something about this?
He shrugged.
Waiting on CIT.
CIT?
Crisis Intervention Team. They're the experts.
Martha shook her head.
Fuck's sake!
She turned to Johnny.
Please, let Elaine go.
Johnny shook his head.
Whatever this is about, we can sort it out,
Martha said. She was disgusted at the sound of her own voice, so unconvincing.
Pathetic.
If she were Johnny, she wouldn't listen either.
Oh, we're going to sort it out all right, Johnny said.
Cal shook his head.
You need help.
Johnny laughed again, bitter and nasty.
I've had all the fucking help I can take, thank you very much.
He turned to Elaine.
Why don't you tell them why we're all here?
Elaine was a wreck, tears and snot on her face.
Johnny grabbed the back of her hair and forced her head forwards so that she was looking out over the drop down to the station. She yelped. He yanked her head backwards.
"Tell them," he said. "Tell them what you all did to me that night."
"We didn't do anything, Johnny," Elaine said.
"You did it to yourself." "You fucking liar!"
He rabbit punched her in the side of the head. Cal, Martha and Billy took a step forward. Johnny relaxed and pointed the gun at them.
"Stop."
Martha had her hands out, pleading. "Look, we know what you've done, but we can help."
"You know what I've done?" Johnny looked round. "What I've done? Really? Why don't you enlighten us all with your pearls of wisdom?"
Martha just wanted to keep him talking. As long as they were talking, no one was jumping or shooting.
"You killed your brother, right here."
Johnny shook his head. He made a sound that might even have been a tut.
"And you call yourself a journalist? Can't even get your facts straight."
Martha frowned.
"How do you know anything about me?"
Johnny smiled.
"It's the 21st century, it's all just a mouse click away. Very different world to the one I knew when I went away."
"But you did kill Ian here," Martha said.
"That's where you're wrong," Johnny said. "I brought him here, but he jumped of his own free will."
"With your gun pointing at him?"
"I don't expect you to believe me," Johnny said, "but I know it's the truth."
"Why would he jump?" Martha said.
"Guilt, shame, depression, the usual. You know all about it."
Martha looked round at the cop, who just raised his eyebrows. She turned back to Johnny.
"Guilt over what?"
"You're the reporter. You figure it out."
"You being locked up in Carstairs?"
"Correct. 21 fucking years. My whole adult life. You've no idea."
"They must have had a reason to keep you in there."
Johnny was shaking his head, as if he didn't want to listen.
"And they were right," Martha said. "As soon as you got out, you killed Ian and Gordon."
Johnny seemed close to tears now.
"I didn't kill Ian. I told you."
"But you did kill Gordon."
Johnny stared right through them, as if remembering. He nodded.
"I think he wanted it, though. Deep down. I know he did. He just needed a little help to go through with it.
Same with Rose." Billy spoke. "Rose isn't dead. We've just come from speaking to her in hospital." Johnny considered this for a moment and seemed to deflate.
"Fuck. That's annoying."
"Why did you try to make them look like suicides?" Martha said, just to keep him talking.
Johnny shook his head.
"Why do you think? I didn't want the police chasing after me while I still had a job to do."
Martha waved a hand at the police car behind her.
"You've kind of blown that whole suicide thing now, haven't you?"
Johnny looked where she was pointing, then at Elaine.
"It doesn't matter anymore. I'm finished. Elaine's the last one. This is the end."
"Tell us what this is about and we can help you," Martha said.
Johnny pointed the gun at Elaine, tears on his cheeks.
"Can you believe I was in love with this woman?"
That laugh again. It made Martha shiver.
"I suppose it was a long, long time ago. But I was in love. Even though she was going out with that idiot brother of mine, despite the fact he was fucking Rose."
He turned to speak to Elaine.
"You should have finished with Ian as soon as you found out you were pregnant with my babies."
The earth shifted under Martha's feet.
"What?"
Johnny nodded.
"Tell them how you've been lying to the two of them for their entire lives."
Elaine just sat there sobbing. She moved her head, but Martha couldn't tell what she meant.
"Mum?"
It was Cal next to her. Elaine still didn't speak.
"Just call me Daddy," Johnny said.
"Elaine?"
Martha's voice sounded weird in her own ears.
"Is this true?"
Silence for a moment. No sign of anything from Elaine.
That's bullshit and you know it, Cal said.
Is it? Johnny said.
Think about it. I've had quite the eye-opening chat with Elaine today. We've had a little while to catch up, finally. Seems like you pair have inherited my brain problems, right?
Cal shook his head.
We've inherited nothing from you. We're just ourselves. Neither you nor Ian ever gave us anything.
Martha wished it were as simple as that.
She wished she could just dismiss the idea, could strike a line through her past and start afresh. But every time the depression descended, she was reminded of her heritage, wherever it came from. She looked around again. The cop was on his radio. Where the fuck were these crisis experts?
Elaine was shaking and crying. The gun was still dug into her ribs and Johnny had a strong grip on her hair with his other hand.
Cal spoke.
Why did you burn down our house?
What?
Whatever happened that night 20 years ago has got nothing to do with me and Martha, Cal said. So why the fuck did you burn our house down?
Johnny looked confused.
I didn't.
Come on, Cal said. You've admitted killing Gordon and trying to kill Rose. What's a little arson compared to that?
Johnny seemed to make a decision.
Fuck it! I've had enough of this!
He stood up in the wall and pulled Elaine to her feet. Then he jumped down onto the stone ledge on the other side, hauling Elaine with him. For a brief moment, they both lost their balance and Martha thought they were going to go over. She ran to the wall, Billy and Cal at her side, all three of them reaching out.
But Johnny wasn't falling. He'd righted himself and he was pointing the gun at them. He had Elaine in a headlock.
I'm going to do what I tried to do 20 years ago, he said. Only this time, I'm going to get it right.
We're not going to let you jump, Cal said. Johnny turned to Elaine.
He's a chip off the old block, eh?
You don't know anything about us, Cal said. You're nothing to do with us.
I wasn't allowed to be, Johnny said, thanks to her and Ian and the rest.
You think this is a game of happy families? Cal said.
As Johnny was talking with Cal, Martha had been inching nearer, watching Johnny closely, getting ready to move. Johnny was waving the gun around to make a point, which meant it wasn't aiming at Elaine anymore.
You're missing the point, Johnny said. I don't want happy families. In fact, quite the opposite. I wasn't allowed it, so no one else gets it either.
He took a small step backwards to the edge of the ledge, dragging Elaine with him. Elaine struggled to pull away, but Johnny had her tight.
I just wanted you both here to see this, he said, so your lives could be ruined, just like mine was.
He lifted the gun momentarily to make a saluting gesture. Martha jumped onto the wall and grabbed his gun arm, yanking it away from his body in an attempt to shake the gun loose. She saw Cal out the corner of her eye scrabble to get hold of his other arm, prise it away from Elaine's neck. Billy was up in the wall too, then suddenly over on the ledge. He headbutted Johnny, flattened his nose in a spray of blood. Johnny reeled backwards just as Cal wrenched his grip free from Elaine. Martha was still holding his gun arm and being dragged over the edge as Johnny's balance deserted him, his momentum sending him backwards, hovering for an impossible second with a blank look in his eyes. No panic. No anger. Just blank. Martha's hold on his sleeve slipped. She felt the material under her fingers as it tore away and she made an instinctive grab for him. But he was already gone, tumbling downwards, arms and legs flailing. He hit platform 8 with a heavy whump that Martha felt in her bones. She felt a hand pull her back from the ledge and turned to see Billy holding onto her from behind. Beside him, Cal had Elaine in a bear hug, leaning against the wall, both of their chests heaving. She turned to look at Johnny's body again. No movement. He almost looked like he was sleeping. Gig number 4, 12th of the 9th, 92. Her life was such a fucking mess. Even the fan club playing The Concept couldn't cheer her up. The music box was heaving, sweat dripping from the ceiling.
It was a dingy, stinking place anyway, but it felt like the walls were closing in on her. She felt dizzy and sick. She gripped the gig ticket in her fist, stared at it, trying to focus, make her breathing steady. Regular Music Limited presents Teenage Fan Club at The Music Box, Edinburgh, Saturday the 12th of September, doors 10 p.m, ticket £6 plus booking fee. On stage, Norman was singing, "She don't do drugs, but she does the pill, oh yeah." If only Elaine had been more like the girl in the song. She didn't know why they called it morning sickness. She got it all hours of the day and night. She looked at her watch. It was after midnight and she felt another wave of nausea sweep over her. What was she even doing here? Trying to convince Ian and herself that everything was okay, everything was normal, everything was going to be fine. But it wasn't. She was living a lie. Her relationship with Ian was over. It's just that no one had done anything to actually finish it yet. Tonight felt like the end point, though. This couldn't go on any longer. She sipped her lager. Shouldn't be drinking, but she hadn't told anyone yet and didn't want Ian to guess. Not until she'd worked out what the hell she was going to do. So she was drinking and smoking joints and hiding her sickness and swollen ankles. That was easy to hide. Ian was barely interested in her anyway. They hardly ever fucked anymore. He was too busy fucking Rose. Not that Elaine had any proof or any moral high ground. She'd been fucking Johnny on and off since that first time in June. And now she was pregnant. But Johnny wasn't the answer. He was getting weirder, really intense, scaring her by talking about a future together one minute, then about how much he wanted to hurt himself the next, how there was no point to anything. Too much drama. How could she possibly ditch Ian and make a life with Johnny? She couldn't see a way out. She felt a nudge. Ian beside her. She gave him a thin smile. "It's your round," he said. He glanced at her pint. "You're going a bit slow, eh? What's up?" "Nothing." She headed to the bar. The band played Star Sign and the crowd went ape. She couldn't handle a fast one. Jerry was singing lead this time. "Do you know where you belong?" If only. She ordered a Stella for Ian. "Hey, gorgeous!" She felt arms around her and squirmed free. "Johnny." She pushed him away. "What the hell are you doing here?" "That's a nice way to greet your lover." He drawled the last word stupidly, like he was making a joke of it. It wasn't a joke. "Ian is just over there," Elaine said. "Jesus Christ, did you follow us?" Johnny held his hands up. "Hey, just enjoying a bit of the fannies. No crime in that, is there?" "Go home, Johnny." He went to kiss her and she dodged out the way. He grabbed her jaw and forced their lips together. She pulled back. "Ow, that fucking hurt!" "Why haven't you told him about us yet?" The pint of Stella arrived and Elaine paid. "It's not as simple as that." "Yes, it is. Want me to do it?" Elaine shook her head. "No. If you don't, I will." "Please, Johnny, I have to handle this my own way." Johnny reached into his jacket pocket and pulled something out. "Maybe this will help you handle it." He handed over a packet of photographs. Elaine opened the flap and squinted at the first one in the neon light from the bar. Ian and Rose kissing in the street, holding hands. She flicked to the next one. Nighttime. The pair of them up against a tree, in the meadows it looked like, her inner thigh rubbing against his leg, his hand up her blouse. Picture five, they were fucking against a tree, Ian's trousers and boxers pushed down, Rose's skirt hiked up, her pants at her ankles. Elaine flicked through the rest of the pictures. Different days, different places, always together, sometimes fucking, mostly snogging her with her hands in each other's pants. They were very tactile in a way she couldn't remember ever being with them. The last two were of them sitting together in a park, her head on his shoulder, both of them laughing. For some reason, this was worse than the pictures of them fucking. They looked like two people in love. She glared at Johnny. "You followed them and took pictures." "Thought you could use the evidence."
Elaine shook her head. Johnny grabbed her elbow, his face too close to hers. The vodka on his breath made her feel sick.
Don't you see? This gives you the excuse you need.
She pushed herself free.
I'm going to be sick.
She ran to the toilet. Into a cubicle just in time, felt the puke rushing up her throat, stripping the skin away as her stomach convulsed. She felt a hand on her back, rubbing.
Johnny.
It's okay.
Get out!
We'll go and tell him together, Johnny said.
Elaine spat into the toilet.
No, we won't.
It's simple.
It's not.
Why isn't it?
Because I'm pregnant.
It just spilled out, and she regretted it straight away. At least it shut him up for a minute, but only a minute.
It's mine, isn't it?
He said.
He was too intense. Too much was happening far too quickly. She didn't want him to have a hold over her, to have a link to her future.
I don't know, she said. Don't lie, he said. I know it's mine.
Elaine pushed past him to the sinks, took a mouthful of water and rinsed her mouth out.
Go home, Johnny, she said. We'll talk about this tomorrow.
No, now.
You're drunk.
So what?
I can't handle this.
She left the ladies. The band were playing Everything Flows, one of her favourites. She saw Ian and couldn't believe it. He was standing talking to Rose, Gordon and Sam lurking in the background.
Really?
Ian and Rose had some balls. Elaine had to get out of here. She went to the bar, picked up the pint that she'd bought him, still sitting there, then walked up to Ian and tapped him on the shoulder. When he turned, she threw the pint in his face, then dropped the plastic glass. Beer sprayed all over Rose, who seemed to be smiling at her. She wanted to punch that smile. She turned and pushed through the crowds towards the door. She was vaguely aware of Johnny behind her, talking to Ian and the rest. The band were in the big finale of the song. Set a course that I don't know. She pushed the door and headed upstairs, claustrophobia drowning her, suddenly needing fresh air above anything else on earth. She was halfway down the Royal Mile before she heard the voices calling after her. She didn't turn round, just shook her head and kept walking. Didn't want to do this now. Didn't want to do it ever. Just wanted to go home and sleep until it was all over.
Elaine.
Ian. Or Johnny.
Shit. Did it matter?
At the top of Coburn Street, she glanced back. They were all coming, gaining on her. Ian, Johnny, fucking Rose, even Gordon. What did it have to do with him? No sign of Sam.
She hit the junction with the bridges, taxis and night buses streaming up and down.
Home was to the right, up Southbridge, but Ian and the rest were across the road, coming towards her from that direction. She went left, onto Northbridge. Needed some space to clear her head.
Elaine, fuck's sake, wait!
Definitely Ian, that time. She heard an argument. Turned and saw the brothers were scuffling in the road, Gordon trying to separate them. She walked further away, across the road, down Northbridge, anything to get away. She heard footsteps and knew what was coming. Felt a hand on her shoulder, spinning her.
Rose.
Wait!
She was out of breath.
Fuck off!
I'm sorry.
I said fuck off!
Elaine shook free of Rose's hand but didn't walk away. She looked at her. Rose was puffing, chest heaving. She was so much more of a woman than Elaine. Knew all the tricks of capturing male attention. Older. Wise to the world. The boys had caught up.
You're pregnant, Ian said. Why the hell didn't you tell me?
She could see everyone was drunker than she was, and she wasn't exactly sober. This was ridiculous.
I'm not having this conversation now.
Why not? Johnny said.
Because it's 5:30 fucking midnight. We've all been drinking for hours and I feel sick and I want to go home.
Just calm down, Rose said.
Don't you fucking speak to me, Elaine said. Just don't. I know exactly what you've been doing with my boyfriend. Don't you tell me to calm down.
What was she doing? She didn't want Ian, so why pretend to be angry about this? But it was the betrayal. The deceit.
And
You've been fucking Johnny, Rose said quietly.
Elaine's eyelids felt very heavy. She scrunched her eyes shut, opened them and looked at Ian. He didn't doubt it. She could tell from the look in his face that he'd probably known all along. He just hadn't admitted it to himself. How many of us sleepwalk through life, she thought, never telling the truth to ourselves. His face now looked like he'd just woken up from a coma. He was piecing his senses and his life back together.
Is the baby mine? He said.
Elaine didn't speak. Johnny came forward and put a hand on his brother's shoulder. Ian shook it off. I said, is the baby mine? It would be easy to say yes or no. Just say yes or no. Put an end to this. Ian looked at Johnny, then back at her. How long has this been going on behind my back? Johnny pulled the photos from his pocket. Don't get on your fucking high horse. He handed them to Ian, who opened the packet, hardly even looked inside. You've been following me.
With good reason, it turns out, Johnny said.
You are fucked up, Ian said. This is Debbie Logan all over again.
It's nothing like that.
Elaine had no idea what they were talking about.
It's exactly like that. Anything I have you want is pathetic.
Anything you have? Elaine said. Excuse me? Johnny pushed at Ian.
You're screwing Rose. At least I was being a friend to Elaine.
Calm down. This was Gordon trying to get in between them. Rose had her hand up to her head. Ian grabbed at his brother past Gordon.
A friend? You're such a fuck-up, you probably believe that's true. You're so fucking deranged. I've spent my whole life looking out for you. I've had enough.
Deranged, Johnny said. A strange look came over him.
I'll show you deranged.
He leapt up onto the wall of the bridge, then was quickly over the other side, standing on the ledge. Elaine went to grab his hand.
Johnny, for fuck's sake!
He had stopped on the ledge and was looking back, grinning.
How's this for deranged?
Ian laughed. Oh, here we go. He shook his head.
You gonna jump, yeah? Show us all how mental you really are. What if I did?
Come on, Ian said.
That would be suicide bid number, what, 4, 5?
Elaine stared at Ian.
What?
Ian looked at her.
He's never serious. It's an attention thing. There's fuck all wrong with him. He just likes being a drama queen.
Elaine reached out over the wall.
Come on, Johnny. Come back over.
No, I'm going to do it, Johnny said.
Something in his face made Elaine believe him. She clambered up onto the wall.
Hey, Ian said. What are you doing?
She briefly turned back.
I'm trying to stop your brother doing something really stupid. It's more than you're doing.
It's what he wants, Ian said. It's all about the attention.
Punters were giving them a wide berth on the pavement. They were just a bunch of drunken nutters dangerously mucking around. Elaine was sitting in the wall now, reaching out.
Come on, Johnny, give me your hand.
She stretched for him, but he shirked away towards the edge.
Okay, relax, Elaine said.
Rose spoke. Please come back over, Elaine. Elaine turned to her. Maybe, in other circumstances, they could have been friends. But she was fucked if she was going to take advice from the woman. Not now.
Fuck you, she said. This was all so messed up. If they could just get down from this bridge and go home, they could sort it all out.
She felt a hand take hers and turned. Johnny. She felt relief. But that changed when she saw his face. He looked in a daze, like he didn't know where he was.
Come here, you cunt, Ian said, and made a lunge for Johnny's other arm.
Johnny flinched away and in a quick movement grabbed Elaine and hauled her down onto the ledge. He pulled her into a hug and stepped backwards off the ledge.
I'm sorry, he whispered in her ear.
Her feet left the ledge and she felt herself falling, a sudden blast of air around her as Johnny's grip tightened. And they fell together. The adrenaline made her breath stop as they dropped through the sky, and the last thing she thought before they hit the ground was that Johnny was not only killing himself and her, but the unborn baby sleeping inside her. Chapter 49. The question hung in the air. Martha stared at Elaine, wondering if she was going to answer. Eventually, Elaine turned and looked her in the eye. A tiny shake of the head. "The truth is, I don't know," she said. "I never found out which one was your dad. Both are possible, if you know what I mean. In the end, does it really matter?" Martha thought about that. They were both dead now, and neither of them had done much for Martha or Cal when they were alive, except maybe give them a family history of mental illness. Cheers for that. Did it really matter? Elaine glanced round and Martha followed her gaze. Ian's flat looked like it had been turned over, but that was just the state Martha had left it in the previous night. There had been a second ambulance down below by the time Johnny had fallen onto Platform 8, and they were at his body straight away. The police officer up in the bridge got the call on his radio moments later. Dead on impact. Martha, Cal, Billy and Elaine were checked over by the paramedics up top. No physical problems. They were interviewed by police while sitting on the back step of the ambulance. The crisis intervention team turned up 10 minutes too late. For Martha and the rest, there would be follow-up stuff, according to the police. But for now, they were free to go. Did they have somewhere to stay? Ian's flat. "This is where Ian lived," Elaine said. Cal nodded. Billy was pouring out the last of the brandy into mugs. He handed them out and sat down. Elaine turned to Martha. "I was in hospital for 2 months after the fall." She had already explained what happened that night, the drunken fight on the bridge, the jump. "The doctor said it was a miracle you both survived. I only found out I was expecting twins after I came round 2 days later. Apparently, Johnny had cushioned my fall. He was even more badly injured than I was." Martha thought about that. A massive trauma like that while still in the womb, that could have an effect on how two babies turned out, couldn't it? Maybe that was the reason she and Cal were the way they were. Cal went over and touched Elaine's arm. "So Ian had Johnny committed?" Elaine sipped her brandy. "That was all done while I was still in hospital. Ian never came to see me. Gordon kept me up to date on what Ian was doing. Apparently, it wasn't the first time Johnny had tried something like that, not by a long way. Gordon said that during the trial, they mentioned 5 other suicide attempts, one of which also involved a young woman. That time, pills, a suicide pact, except the girl didn't know anything about it, woke up in hospital, but refused to press charges." Martha frowned. "But even with a history of mental instability, Johnny was in Carstairs for so long." Elaine shrugged. "If you don't show improvement, they can keep you in forever, especially if you still seem a danger to others. The impression I got from Gordon was that Johnny got worse inside there, and since Ian was his only remaining relative, he had a big say in what happened." "You think Ian kept him in out of spite?" "Maybe that was part of it. Maybe he was sick of having to clean up his brother's messes. And Johnny really was a threat. Christ, he's proven that since he came out, hasn't he?" Martha drank. "But why do you think Ian changed his mind recently? Why sign him out after all these years?" Elaine shook her head. "Maybe he felt remorse. Maybe Johnny tricked him. We're never going to know, are we?" Cal sighed. "You think it's true, what Johnny said, that Ian jumped of his own accord?" Elaine didn't answer. There weren't any more answers. She looked down at her mug. "I'm sorry. I should have told you both about Johnny, and I shouldn't have told you that Ian was your dad when I didn't know for sure, but it just crept up on me. When you were little, it wasn't a problem. It was just the three of us.
but then you started asking about why you didn't have a daddy, all that stuff. I suppose I panicked a little bit. I just thought it was easier to say Ian. I spoke to him about it and he said he was fine with it, as long as we didn't expect anything from him. Back when it happened, it was horrible. I didn't want to think about any of it ever again. I was recovering from the fall on my own with twins coming. I wanted a fresh start, the three of us. We didn't need a dad, not Ian or Johnny or anyone else. You understand that, don't you? There were big streaks of tears in her face as Cal gave her a hug. It's okay, he said, rubbing her back. Elaine looked at Martha. Martha, you understand why I did it, don't you? Martha looked around the room, at Billy, at the mess of her life, at the flat of the man she used to think was her dad. Maybe he still was. Maybe he wasn't. Maybe it didn't matter. She downed her brandy and sighed. I understand. Chapter 50. You don't have to do this, Cal said. Yes, I do. Back in the ECT waiting room next morning, same beige and brown walls, same scratchy seats. Martha fiddled with the information leaflet in her hand. 2 sessions per week for 3 weeks. Switching things off and back on again. She looked at Cal. Besides, I think I could do with some short-term memory loss, don't you? Cal raised his eyebrows at her. The door opened and Colleen shuffled through. Big smile when she saw the two of them. It's yourselves, she said. She sorted through some papers on her desk and handed Martha the clipboard and questionnaire. The same one she'd filled in 2 days ago. How was she feeling? Any major stress in the last 7 days? All that. Did you catch up with that fella you were looking for? Colleen said to Martha. Martha and Cal looked at each other and shook their heads. We did, Martha said. Chapter 51. She stood outside the hospital and blinked. Sunlight was fizzing all around her, and she stood there like a lizard on a rock, warming her blood. She was aware of air molecules colliding with her eyeballs, drifting up her nose. She breathed in. Cigarette smoke and pollen and cheap cooking smells. Good to be alive, after all. She looked at her watch. 4 hours ago, she'd woken up in a different hospital. Took it easy this time. Let Cal and the nurse take care of her for a bit. Then she'd sat up and persuaded Cal to let her come here. She headed inside and followed the signs for Ward 19. Rose was out of bed, sitting in a classy silk nightie in the plastic chair by the window. The view outside was terrible. Chunky hospital buildings, air vents, a meat delivery truck down below. Hey, Martha said. Rose turned and smiled. It was a genuine smile, and Martha liked it. Hi, Martha, Rose said. Sit down. She waved at a seat over by an empty bed. Martha grabbed it and brought it over, sat across from her. Billy has been in, Rose said. Told me everything that happened. Yeah? Rose shook her head. Quite a night. You could say that. How are you doing? Martha did a little inventory. No headaches, no aches and pains, no heavy weight pressing down on her, no blackness on the horizon. Her heart felt light, like it could float on water. I'm good. She rummaged in her bag and pulled out Rose's laptop. Here. Rose gave her a strange look. You hold on to that for now. Why? Do you have your own laptop? No? Well, keep it for me. You can put it to good use. I'm sure you'll need it. Not so sure I'll be doing much writing for a while. Martha frowned. But you are going back to the paper, right? Rose stared out the window. We'll see. Maybe. Rose, you have to. Rose just shrugged. Martha laid the laptop on her knees. You know he typed a suicide note from you on this?
Billy told me about the typo. They were both smiling. Martha put the laptop back in her bag, pulling out the Walkman to make room for it. Rose looked at it. You should probably invest in some new technology, you know.